Sound the trump in Zion. Raise the alarm on my holy mountain. Let everyone tremble in fear, because the day of the Lord is upon us. It is a day of darkness and gloom, a day of thick clouds and deep blackness. But suddenly, like dawn spreading across the mountains, a great and mighty army appears. Nothing like it has been seen before or will ever be seen again. The Lord is at the head of the column. He leads them with a shout. This is His mighty army, and they follow His orders. Patriots, I hope you are having a great day. Get ready, buckle up, because here we go. I have something really, really awesome to talk to you about today. I did a video on this way back, I think it was in 2019, on the Lost Tribes of Israel. It is extremely important information, and so I felt that I needed to do it again, maybe with some new information that I have gleaned in the past 6 years, but more importantly, because it's coming into the view right now, and it's saving Israel for last, and it's very important that we understand who is Israel, who are we talking about here, and there's a lot of misinformation about it, and so I want to make sure that you understand, so you don't get caught up in a lot of the misinformation about Israel. Okay, so if you're not familiar with my channel, I'm Melissa Redpill. This is make sure to hit the like, everybody. Don't forget, hit the like right now, and make sure you're subscribe, your notifications are on, and you can also check to make sure that all of my information is over on melissaredpill.com. Let me make this a little bit smaller, and so you can see the links here. We go back. All right. I don't know why it's not doing that. All right. So here is the video that I did way back in 2019 called The Lost Tribes of Israel Found. And so I'm going to be basically going along with the information that I found in this wonderful book called Missing Links Discovered in Assyrian Tablets. Really amazing. We'll get to that in just a minute. So let me go back to see if I can get back to the main screen. And it's still too big. All right, so there we go. Now I can see the links. So here are the social media links, so you can join with us on our social media and follow the real Melly over there, melissaredpill.com. Okay, y'all ready? Let's get going, because I have so much to tell you. Let's first start with this, that the Lord had a blessing that was going through Abraham and the promised son Isaac. We're going to get to that at the end of the video, and to one of Isaac's sons. There was Esau and there was Jacob. And the question is, which son was the blessing going to go through? And so it's not just about money. It's about the rule of the earth. Who is going to be the one ruling the earth? Is it going to be Esau? Which was, the truth is, Esau was not the righteous one. He was, he did not care to at all about following the Lord. He just did not. He was not a righteous person. And Jacob really did. Now, was Jacob perfect? I'm sure he was not. But that the point is, even Abraham, it says in the book of Jasher, that he wanted the blessing to go through Jacob. And then later on, if you remember Jacob, much later on, he wrestled with the Lord and the Lord touched his hip. He saw the Lord as the dawn was breaking, and he lived. And so that's when his name was changed from Jacob to Israel. But let's back up. Before that, Jacob wanted the blessing, and Abraham wanted him to have the blessing, but his father Isaac did not. He wanted it to go to Esau, the cool son who was bringing him all this. He was like the macho man. And so he did not want to give the blessing to Jacob. And so by this time, Abraham had already gone to be with the Lord. And so Isaac just feels like he can do whatever he wants to do. Well, the problem is, if the rule of the world, if the blessing of the rule of the world goes to someone who's hard set to do evil, then there's no hope for humanity. Okay, so we need someone who is going to have the rule to, of course, we found this out, right? We need someone who is truly loves humanity, loves the people, and will work for the good of humanity. Now, this is a little video about what happened when he left, when Jacob got the blessing, and he had to basically run for his life, and because Esau was so mad, because Esau was in it for the money and all the wealth and all that, he ended up getting all that. Jacob didn't care about that. He cared about getting the blessing of being in the line of the great great grandfather of Christ, and that he would have the family that would rule the world in righteousness. Okay, that's what he really wanted. And so that's, you know, Esau didn't want that anyway. So he really didn't miss out. But Esau wanted the world to be run his way in evil. And they have been, to be honest. They've been ruling, the Edomites, his descendants have been ruling, not so much about bloodline, but symbolically, his descendants have been running roughshod over humanity. Okay, so I'm going to show you what happened when he got to this mountain called Beth-El, and he found this stone. He thought this is such an interesting stone. It's very odd shaping. It's, you know, they sometimes call it a pillow, but it's very hard for a pillow. Not like my pillow, right? It's square, obviously hard like a rock, and it's but he laid his head on it. Very cool. And it was the first step in the stairway to heaven. So check this out.
Set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said,
I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you.
We could watch the whole video, but I'll make sure you have the link. I just mainly wanted you to see that he saw this stairway to heaven, and it was that the pillow that he was on, that stone, was the, really, they don't show this in the video, but it was the first step on the stairway to heaven. And so if you remember, our Lord Jesus said, he said, you know, what you are seeing, you're going to see. I like this one because some of them, they do a ladder. I don't think it was a ladder. I think it was actually stair steps that he saw. And so the angels are ascending and descending. I think that's really more like what he saw. And so it says that our Lord Jesus said that you will see the Son of Man with angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man. And so he is that staircase to heaven, of course. And he's the one that connects heaven to earth, is our Lord Jesus. So you also heard in that promise, he says, I'm going to have you, your people, fill the earth. So that is foreshadowing what was going to happen, that we would be, God's people would be scattered all over the earth. All right, so I think that's really a great place to start. And so he took that stone, and he took the little bit of oil that he had with him. This shows that he was a man of faith. He took the little bit of sustenance he had, and he poured it onto that stone, but he couldn't carry it because it was too heavy. And so he ended up taking that, coming when he came back after he had his children and they were coming back through there, then he ended up picking up that, getting that stone. And so they carried it from then on. And here is what they call the Stone of Destiny. This is the Stone of Destiny. It's really, really big. You know, I don't remember how many pounds it is, but I actually got to see it when I went to Scone Abbey, the Scone Museum, rather, in Perth. Let's see, was it Perth, Scotland? Yeah. And so I got to see it, And so I think, actually, to be honest, I don't think it's the original stone. I think the original stone at the Scone Abbey, which, because we did go there also, and I was talking with the people at the Abbey and the museum and the all the grounds, and they led me to believe that it was something that was back in the day that the King Edward or one of the kings, British kings, tried to come and get the stone, and they had it hidden away, and they gave him a fake stone. But they said, okay, this is our most prized possession, when they came and they actually stole the stone. But that, I'm getting ahead of myself. But the point is, that's where it is, supposedly, now. And I actually got to go and see it at this museum, and they even say in the video that this is the most prized possession of all of England. Okay, and why is that? They say it's because this was the stone that came directly from Jacob putting his head on this stone and seeing the stairway to heaven. They have a video in there about that. All right, so whether it's the real stone or whether it isn't the real stone, okay, that's another, you know, another discussion. Anyway, so the main thing is to understand that this is the stone of destiny. It's a stone of royalty. It's the coronation stone, and so all of the kings would be crowned standing on or sitting on that stone. And legend has it that when they would stand there, the stone would cry out the name of the king if it was the king that God wanted to rule. Okay, so this is another thing I want you to see. Let me see if there's okay, so very interesting is that each of the sons of Jacob, because I'm going through history kind of quickly, because I got to get all the way to present day in 45 minutes. But okay, so when you, when Jacob was giving his blessing to each of his sons, each of them got a special blessing specifically about, you know, themselves. And so, for example, Judah got this blessing. It says, "The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from his descendants until the coming of the one to whom it belongs, to the one whom all nations will honor." Okay, so what it leads you to believe is that the one who is going to come is not going to be from Judah, right? It's what it sounds like, but I'm just throwing that out there because I've been researching a little bit about that, and I want to show you what I think may be the case on that. Anyway, so but the scepter, the rule, has been in the line of Judah, and so all the kings in Judah and in Israel were supposed to be from, were supposed to be from the line of Judah. And there were two lines. One was the Pharez line and one was the Zara line. I'm going to get to that in a second. But okay, so the ruler's staff, the scepter, is controlled by Judah. Okay, so until the coming of the one to whom it belongs. Now, when you scroll down a little bit and you see more about Joseph. I'm going to throw this out there about Joseph. He says a very, very interesting blessing to Joseph. Joseph is the foal of a wild donkey. They attacked him. They shot at him. His bow remained taut. His arms were strengthened by the hands of the mighty one of Jacob, by the shepherd, the rock of Israel. May the God of your father help you. May the almighty one bless you with the blessings of the heavens above, the blessings of the watery depths below, the blessings of the breast and the womb. May my fatherly blessings on you surpass the blessings of my ancestors, reaching to the heights of the eternal heavens. May these blessings rest on the head of Joseph, who is prince among his brothers. That makes you think that he is to be he's getting not just double blessing. It looks like he's getting all the blessings, really, are going to Joseph. And it appears that maybe it's to him the blessing of rule will belong, especially when you realize that who was the one back in the day that received the blessing of ruling in Egypt was Joseph. He became the first, you know, the second ruler in all of Egypt and saved all of his family and really the known world. And so that makes you think, it may not have really, Judah really didn't have that as as the blessing that would go to him. He would take the scepter, but the scepter really didn't really belong to him. Okay, it's very interesting. Something to really think about and pray about, because someone had mentioned that. And I thought there's probably in that. That's probably very, very, very right. And all the kings of Judah and Israel. I'm going to show you the map of that in just a second. They were. You would have a good king, like Joash or Josiah, and then you'd have a bad king. And then you'd have another bad king, and then you'd have another bad king, and then you'd have a good king. And so they were leading the people astray, leading the people to do a lot of very, very bad things. So that makes you also think that the line of Judah was really not the righteous line that really should rule the world, because this is too much to have in our country. We've had good presidents, and then most of them have been assassinated, and then you'd have a bad president and a bad president and a bad president. So this is not working. Okay, so anyway, something to think about, just on the side. All right, now, so whenever they had that stone, this was the blessing stone. And so even when they went into Egypt and they came out of Egypt, when they were delivered out of Egypt, the stone went with them, and they carried that stone through the wilderness. And I believe that that stone was the stone that Moses struck, not like in this picture. If you remember, they needed water. We've got, I don't know, a million people, some crazy number of people out in the wilderness. You're going to have to provide water. Who, how in the world are we going to get the water for all these people? Well, Moses struck the rock, and then water poured forth for all the people, which was miraculous for it to come out of a rock. But everyone has always thought, you know, you've seen a picture, oh, it's this rock right here. Well, I think it was this rock right here. I think it was that rock. How even much more miraculous is it that the rock would just pour out the water? And, okay, let me show you this wonderful verse here from 1 Corinthians chapter 20, verse 10. It says, in the cloud and in the sea, all of them were baptized as followers of Moses. All of them ate the same spiritual food, the manna, in the wilderness, and all of them drank the same spiritual water, for they drank from the spiritual rock that traveled with them, and that rock was Christ. So, because later on, Moses struck the rock, and so that rock where he had struck before would have been miles and miles back, right? So now he's striking this rock. Well, it sounds like it's a movable rock, and so this is the movable rock right here that goes along with them. That rock that goes with us, just like in your life and my life, wherever you live, wherever you go, the Lord is with you, and you feed on him, and you know, he is your sustenance. So I think that is very, very likely what happened, that this stone was going through, going with them. Now, when they get into the promised land, I'm fast forwarding a lot, but they cross over into the promised land. And actually, before they even did that, before they get there, right after they cross over, let me see if I can find the one I want. That's not the one. Okay, let me do it this way. When they cross over into the promised land, they are so thankful, and they set up stones. And I believe, you know, the pictures that we always had in Sunday school were that they set them up kind of like a pyramid, or, you know, stacked on top of each other. And I don't think that that's the case. I think they set them up as in a circle. I think they set them up in a like a zodiac, because each of the tribes of Israel is represented by one of the major constellations. For example, Naphtali is represented by Virgo. Judah is represented by the Leo, the lion. You know, each one of the tribes is represented by a major constellation, and I think they set them up in that way. So you would, you know, north, south, east, and west, and somehow identifying each of the stones with them. I bet that is really more how they did it. Moses had told them not to, you know, do the false god worship, the satanic sacrifices that the people in that land were committing. Now, this, you didn't probably hear this in Sunday school. I didn't either. But that's really what the problem was. The people were Canaanite cannibals. And so Moses was telling them not to follow what they did, because if they did, the curses that would fall on these people for their evil would fall on them too. And so he said, you've got to drive the people out of the land. You've got to kill them all, because these people are Satan worshipers. So if that's why, you're like, why do you have to kill them all? That was the reason. Okay. And he said, let me see if I can scroll down a little bit to farther down in Deuteronomy chapter 29, says, You remember how we lived in the land of Egypt and how we traveled through the lands of the enemy nations as we left. You've seen their detestable practices and their idols made of wood, silver, stone, and gold. I'm making this covenant with you so that you no one among you, no man, woman, clan, or tribe will turn away from the Lord to worship these gods of the other nations, and so that no root among you bears bitter and poisonous fruit. So, and actually, if you remember in the New Testament, it talks about not having any poisonous fruit, you know, that comes among you. And you've always think about it as being like backbiting. Really, it's much, much deeper than that. It's more of doing evil, to join in with evil, doing evil things. That's just that we just couldn't imagine it happening in the church. But now we realize that the Catholic Church, the Christian Church, the Muslim, all of it has been used for, a lot have been used for evil. And he was saying, you don't get involved with this root of evil. And it comes from this passage right here in Deuteronomy 29. So he says, do not get involved with this satanic worship. Okay, so that's what he was telling them to make sure not to participate in this. But they ended up not listening, and so you ended up having the kingdom divided. So in the north kingdom, there were 10 of the tribes in the north, and there were 2 tribes in the south. You've got, and this isn't really the greatest picture, but you've got, you know, Naphtali, Manasseh, Ephraim, Gad, Asher, Issachar, all in the north, and then you only have 2 tribes in the southern area of Judah. And so there, yeah, you've got the kingdom divided. And so they both ended up participating, joining in with all this evil Baal worship. And you can see how it can happen, because we've seen the brainwashing. We see how strong these people are. We see how they infiltrate and how they take over, and they convince everybody that this is the thing to do on whatever, you know, transgender or whatever it is. And so, yes, this is when Elijah was there, the people thought, yes, well, God expects us to sacrifice our children. And we talk about this in the book, Major Clues from Minor Prophets. We talk about how, you know, that was the issue in every one of the minor prophets. They were saying, we've got to not participate in this Baal worship, in this of the Canaanites, and they had, and then they were having to be cast out of the land because of the evil that they had done. And it's not just about then; it's talking about what's happening now, because the prophets were telling us that there would be a day that would come when a righteous army would rise up all over the world. That's exactly what we've done, and that we would cast them out once and for all. Okay, and so anyway, we go into all that in every one of the minor prophets, whether it's Micah or Zephaniah or Zechariah, all of them, we go in and we realize how it's a fulfillment in our day. All right, so he told them not to get involved, but they did. And so now the thing he said, once they do, that they would have to be cast out. Okay, now let's talk about Joseph real quick. So now we're getting into about Israel. They, remember, Joseph had a coat of many colors. What is this coat representing? Why does he have this beautiful coat? And it's because his family is multi-ethnic. And this is so cool. I did another video called What Israel Really Looks Like. Here's the link to it is from 7-24, What Israel Really Looks Like. And actually, I think it was before that. This was, I think I did it even before that. But if you remember, Jacob, very interesting family, but Jacob had 4 wives. Very, very interesting. We're not going to get into exactly why this all happened, but the point was they were not able to conceive, and it was, you know, very important that they had babies. And so the first thing was in the wedding, the late Laban, Jacob had worked for 7 years to get Rachel, to marry Rachel. And at the wedding, Laban, the father, tricked Jacob into marrying Leah. And he didn't even realize it until the morning. And that just doesn't even, not even understanding that, but that's how it worked. He didn't even realize until the morning that this was not Rachel. I don't know if he'd had way too much to drink. I don't know what it was, but either way, he didn't realize that that was not even Rachel. And so he came in out in the morning, says, wait, this is not the deal. And so he ended up working another 7 years for Rachel. And so Rachel became his wife. Actually, she became his wife immediately. But either way, now he's got two wives. But now, you know, Leah is able to have babies, but Rachel has not been able to have a baby. And so she says, well, have a baby through a proxy, through my servant, Bilhah. Now, I wanted just to mention that Bilhah likely was of a different ethnicity. She was a servant. She was a slave girl. So she was likely dark skin, maybe Indian. Either way, she was likely not of the same skin color as Rachel. You know, the Bible really doesn't say exactly, but she was likely of a different skin color. Okay. For whatever color it was. And then, so now they get into a race about who's going to have the most babies. And so Leah has her slave girl, Zilpah, get involved. And so now we've got four wives of children coming from four different women. Then you fast forward to later on when Joseph went to Egypt and he married an Egyptian woman, surely very dark skin. And so now they've got two of the tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim, are there. So you've got five different women and all different colors of skin. And I believe that's why, you know, this is a picture of Joseph having a coat of many colors, is that it represents the family. The Israelites don't all look the same. It's very important. It's not about bloodline. It's not about, you know, that a pure bloodline. Because even from the very, very beginning, the family of Israel, Jacob's name was changed to Israel, was multi-ethnic, multicolored, just like Joseph's coat of many colors, okay? This is very, very important because a lot of people get really tangled up with this idea of there being this bloodline and a pure bloodline. It's not about that. We never talk about that. That is not biblical at all. It says the flesh profits nothing. Okay, so I wanted you to see that. And so he's got the 12 stars, and you know we'll and there's 13 actually with Joseph's now with bringing in his family. That means you actually have a 13th. We can talk about that later. All right. So before they get scattered, I'm just going to give you one example of someone standing on this stone I was showing you before, and also about how the people, how the kings were so evil. And this is one of the kings. This is Joash's grandmother. Joash was a little boy, and they said they'd hidden him away for years because this evil queen mother had killed all of her grandchildren. How outrageous is that? Her name is Adaliah. Adaliah. What a liar Adaliah was. She was so evil. And so she had killed them all, and they finally brought out little Joash, and they crowned him. And I want to read to you what it says when they crowned him. This is from 2 Kings chapter, let me back up here, chapter 11. Again, I love 11s are really interesting. And so it says here in chapter 11, I think it's actually 11, or right close to it. Okay, here we go. It says, the priest gave the captains of hundreds the spears and shields which had belonged to King David that were in the temple of the Lord. Then the escort stood, every man with his weapons in his right hand, all around the king, from the right side of the temple to the left side of the temple, by the altar and the house. And he brought out the king's son and put the crown on him and gave him the testimony. I believe that's the word of God. It's like he's going to rule. Yeah, it doesn't say. Anyway, and they made him king and anointed him, and they clapped their hands and said, long live the king. Well, the grandmother finds out about this, that he's being crowned, and he deserved the crown, not her. She was hoping he was dead, and he wasn't. And so she's always, oh, it's intrigue, it's treason. No, that's you. And so how similar does that sound to what we've experienced? Anyway, so these fakers, these usurpers. Anyway, so I wanted you to see that he is standing on the stone. Let me see if I can, the temple, the side of the temple, by the altar and the house. Let me see if this. Okay, I'm going to look up real quick. I thought that I had the different version. There are versions where it talks about that he's standing on the stone, and I'm going to look up 11:11. Isn't that interesting that it's 11:11? It's a lot of 11:11s. All right, so here is, if you can do look at all English translations. So here it is in the altar. Okay. Let me do something super quick. Can't do that. Pause. Okay, that didn't work. I was hoping that would do that for me. Okay, so John, all some kind of cool stuff. Let me back up and see if I can find which one it is. I'm going to say, let's look at the King James real quick. It's maybe in the King James that he's standing on this stone. So he's actually standing on a pillar or standing on that. So let's just see if it's 2 Kings chapter 11. Thought I had it pulled up for you guys. Bear with me real quick, and I'm going to find this for you. At the right corner of the temple, put a crown on him. He brought forth. Okay, here we go. Here's the one. When she looked, behold, the king stood by a pillar, as the manner was. And the princes and the trumpeters by the king and all the people of the land rejoiced and blew with trumpets. And Adonai rent her clothes, crying, treason, treason. Okay, whatever, lady. You're not even deserving of this at all to begin with. All right, so he stood by the pillar. And so they call this Jacob's pillar, or Jacob's stone of destiny, or Jacob's pillow. Anyway, so he's standing beside it or standing on it. And a lot of times when you see them being crowned, they're standing by this pillar, and this was the custom. And so you'll see that's what this is about. And so you may not really see it if you're not looking for it. And like, here I was looking for it, I still wasn't seeing it. But anyway, that's what it's talking about, is this coronation stone. This is a coronation stone, and that's why it is the number one most prized possession of all of England. All right, so now, Adelaide is not happy about that. Yeah, so that's what's going on with her. Now, fast forward to some more bad kings. You remember the famous Jezebel and Ahab, and how they were leading the people to do this terrible satanic sacrifices. And so if you remember, Elijah came and said, we're going to have a showdown between who is the true and living God. And they made two separate altars. Well, this is a very sanitized video, a picture of the prophets of Baal. That's not what they look like. They were very, you know, very evil. They were cutting themselves and carrying on and making a big show. And so this is where they got to, is the people were convinced that, oh, well, this must be the true thing, because, you know, this is all the people with all the fancy hats and the fancy outfits and the power structure, and they must be telling the truth. And they obviously were not. And God proved that when he lit up his altar that had been drenched in water, they realized that they'd been duped. They've been lied to. So this is what's been going on. The people were duped into following these evil satanic rituals all this time. And so now, just like Moses had said, he said, listen, when you move out of the way a little bit, in the future, when you experience all these blessings and cursings I have listed for you, and when you're living among the nations to which the Lord has exiled you, take to heart all these instructions. If at that time you and your children return to the Lord your God, and if you obey with all your heart and your soul all the commands I have given you today, then the Lord will restore your fortunes. So this is what he was warning them. He says, if you do this, now, which I'm afraid you're going to do, I'm afraid you're going to do this, evil. But remember, even when you're scattered, even hundreds of years into the future, it's written to us that you will have the blessing. If you return to the Lord, you'll have the blessing of the Lord. Okay, so he's telling that they would be scattered all throughout the world. So now fast forward to this wonderful man named E. Raymond Capt. He has written this amazing book. It was published in 2010. He's done this amazing research on the Assyrian tablets. Let me go back to the picture to show you the map. Not that one. This one. Just north of Israel is there's Judah. Jordan right there. But north of this is this Assyria area. And so the tribes in the north of in Israel, the 10 northern tribes of Israel, were cast out and scattered. Not really scattered at that point, but yeah, I mean scattered somewhat, but they were hauled into captivity in Assyria. Now, the ones in Judah were hauled into Babylon. Now, there's a big desert right here, so they ended up having to go around like this, and they ended up in Babylon, which was over here on the far east. But this is this area up here is where they were taking the tribes, the northern tribes of Israel. Those were taken there. So this wonderful man has found these Assyrian tablets, and he's been able to discern what they said, much like hieroglyphics, and to determine, you know, where the people ended up going. So really amazing. I really appreciate all of his work that he did to decode this and help us to understand. And so then we are able to identify what they were called. And so their names were changed, and it's really has a root from Gomer. And if you remember in our study that we did on the lost on the major clues from Minor Prophets, you'll remember that that Gomer was the unfaithful wife of Hosea, and it's a picture of God's people, you know, worshiping other gods instead of worshiping the true and living God, being unfaithful to the Lord. And so here you see this picture of Gomera that comes from Gomer. And they didn't want the people of Israel to think of themselves as a faithful wife. They wanted them to think that you've been cast out. You're Gomera now. You're not the bride anymore of the Lord, the precious to him anymore. You have been cast out. You are, you know, on the outs with the Lord. And so that's why they changed their name to Gomera, the unfaithful wife, that they're no longer married to the Lord, like they were divorced. Okay, so if you notice here, there's the Caspian Sea, there's the Black Sea. So there's Assyria right in here is where the people were initially moved. Later on, Isaiah 45, you know, it talks about Cyrus was the king of the entire known world. And he told the people, he says, okay, I am the king of the entire world. You can move wherever you please, because wherever you move is my kingdom, and you'll have to do what I say wherever you are. So later on, like 100 years later, they were able to move, and then they scattered even more. And so here's a picture of the scattering. So there's the Caspian Sea, the Black Sea, and you'll see they went across the Caucasus Mountains, and they went all around through here, and really not just through Europe, but also into India, and this is into Russia right here. So this tells you, you know, where the tribes were scattered. And if you remember in the book of James, it says in verse 1 of chapter 1, it says, James, a bondservant of God and of the Lord Jesus, to the 12 Hebrew tribes scattered abroad among the Gentiles in the dispersion. It says this all throughout, every version says the same thing. The James was writing to the dispersed tribes. Now, everyone back in the day knew this. They knew that all the tribes had been scattered. They'd gone all throughout the world. And so this was common knowledge. It's been hidden from us, though, in our day. You know, most people don't realize that. But if you read the book of James, that was a little tidbit that he gave us so that we would understand that that's what happened with God's people, that they were scattered and that they were writing this letter to the scattered tribes or the dispersion or the diaspora. Now, what they use that word a lot of times, the diaspora, saying this is just this, like the Zionists who've been all over the world and they have been able to go back to their homeland. But that's not really what it's talking about here. This is the diaspora from the scattering and the Assyrian captivity. So that's really what it's talking about. And it's again, the tribes of Israel are red and yellow, black and white. They are precious in his sight. God's people, you know, from all these tribes scattered all over the world, not just this one little ethnic group. That's not the case. That's not biblical. All right, so then also Peter said this, that he was writing an apostle of Jesus Christ to the refugees scattered throughout Pontus. So refugees, exiles, and then in another passage, strangers, it says, to those who reside as exiles scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, Bithynia, who are chosen, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so it talks about that to the exiles. Clearly that's what it's talking about, is we've been exiled, and what is the exile from? It's from the time when we were cast out, our forefathers were cast out of the land because of following into Baal worship. All right, and so then if you look here, this is actually on my website where the tribes scattered to. And so here you'll see, basically, I made this little map to make it kind of simple. You've got Asher and Simeon and Levi here. You've got Reuben. You've got Zebulun up here. And so how can you identify them? How do you know that this is where they move? Well, there are several ways. And that is what's so great about this wonderful man, E. Raymond Capt, who was able to do all this research and determine where they went. And it's based upon their heraldry, the flags, as well as the names. For example, you'll find some groups are called Jacobites in the British Isles. A lot of people were called Jacobites. And also there were some that were called Isaacsons. It's Isaacsons, right? And then you've got their artistry, their ironwork and their metalwork. You can identify, okay, this is definitely Hebrew ironwork or jewelry work. And then you'll also see different towns like the Danube River and the Danites. Those were the tribe of Dan. So this is how you're able to identify them. And if you look here on, like I said, on my website, freedomforce.live/flags, FLAGS, freedomforce.live/flags, then you can see, okay, the heraldry here, here's Zebulun, his blessing that Jacob gave to him. Remember how I told you he gave a blessing to Judah, he gave a blessing to Joseph? Well, here are the blessings that came to the other tribes. Zebulun was a man of ships, and so a lot of these places where they build ships are the tribes of Zebulun. How cool is that? And you'll see even now on their heraldry, you'll see that they still have these ships on their flags. Same thing with Gad. He's got this horse. And then you've got the Benjamin has a wolf. And then Naphtali has a gazelle. And Dan has three of them, actually, a horse and a eagle and a serpent. And then you'll see Simeon, which has a castle, and each one of them has their own ones. Joseph, I'm going to point this one out because then we're going to get to that in a second. Joseph, who's one of his sons was Manasseh and the other was Ephraim. You'll see that Joseph has the olive branches and the arrows. Remember that. Very cool. And so then Ephraim has a donkey, but not just a donkey. It's like a unicorn. Very interesting for Ephraim, and as well as a bull. And then you'll see Zara has this red hand. Really don't have time to go into that on this video. I have other videos where I go into that. But Judah had two sons. One was Zara and one was Phares. The first line they called just Judah. And so that one has the lion, whereas the second one has this little red hand, because he had put his hand out to be born first, but Zara was the one who didn't, anyway, he was not born. He was ended up being the second born. Interestingly, but I don't want to forget to tell you about this, when we went to Ireland, a lot of things were marked as with Zara. It was really very, very common. And I noticed it. If I hadn't done this study, I probably wouldn't have even paid it any attention. But they still have a lot of businesses that are named Zara, and so it really makes me think. I wonder how many of the people realize where that came from, and that's from, maybe they do. But the second line of Judah, and they had moved there first because they wanted to rule somewhere. Where are we going to rule? They moved to the British Isles. And then the other tribe of Judah was ruling in Jerusalem until they were cast out into captivity. I'll show you that in just a second. So here's the divided kingdom, as we were talking about. And then you'll see, okay, here's more of a picture of where the captivity was, the Assyrian captivity here, the Babylonian captivity here. Okay, and they couldn't go through here because it is desert. All right, well, people wouldn't have made it. But yet, on this page, freedomforce.live/flags, you'll see that I have put all these flags of each of the tribes. And you'll see, look at there, you'll see these wolves. And so you know that that's this town in Germany is, or this town in Switzerland, is where the tribes of Israel went. You can follow them easily with their heraldry. How cool is that? And a lot of people, reality is a lot of people don't leave. They don't emigrate and leave their town once they get settled. It takes a lot for someone to jump up and leave, right? Just like you might have moved from one state to another, but more than likely you don't leave your country unless there's something, some big deal. Because, you know, when you move, then you've got to, it's very expensive. There's got to be some reason. You've got to have a job at this other place. You've got to, you know, you've got to know the language, all that. All right, so there's, you see, I mean, how cool is this? Look at this. There's the castle in Spandau, Berlin, Germany, and in Bath, England. Isn't that cool? It's right there. It's very, very easy to follow. How awesome is that? Here's Asher. You see this, and it must have, it's Asher and the ship. So it must have been Asher and whichever one that was. I get them confused. But anyway, so you see all the heraldry really helps you to identify which tribes were there. Now, it's very interesting when you see one that's got quadrants, it's because it'll have maybe three of the tribes together. So cool. So anyway, I'll show you more about that in a little bit. But like this one, here's one. This one has four different quadrants. And so you see, you know, David's harp there. And so it, you know, just identifying that they maybe in one area, but they were represented by four different tribes. All right. Now this one is really cool. This one, let me make it a little bit smaller. This one is Manasseh. And so this is one of Joseph's sons. And notice how very cool this is. It's got not only the olive branches, but also the arrows. And notice the great seal of the United States has the arrows and the olive branches. I think that means that America is represented by the tribe of Manasseh, which is one of Joseph's tribes, and the blessing bundle that went, the blessing that went to Manasseh. Very, very interesting that I just believe that this is part of our destiny to save the world, much like Joseph did. Remember how Joseph was his brother's bundle of grain, bowed down to his bundle of grain? If you don't remember that story, it's like in, Genesis 40, something like that. And so, you know, he'd had that dream probably a little earlier, but either way, he had his brother's bundles bowed down to his bundle, and it's kind of like in America that everybody's counting on America to save the world, that they're ready to, you know, acquiesce to America. Like, you guys have to step up. And so thankfully Joseph stepped up and he saved the world, and America will too. That's what's happening. That's what we're witnessing right now. That just like even Moses was saying back in Genesis chapter 30. All right. So yeah, you'll see, isn't this cool? There's Zebulun with all the ships. They're right there. There's Issachar that is a donkey. He literally has a donkey on it. I mean, why would someone pick a donkey? The reason is because of going back to the blessings that they were given in the book of Genesis chapter 49. Just his last words, Jacob's last words when he was leaving, he gave them. Like here says, Dan will be a poisonous snake beside the road, a poisonous viper along the path, right there. Here's Issachar. He's a sturdy donkey resting between two saddle packs. So it's, you know, very, very obvious that that's what this is. All right. And I just love this. So definitely go and check that out when you have a minute. And I think you'll really, really enjoy seeing that. Here's Naphtali, that is the gazelle. You see all these towns in Germany, the Netherlands, in Russia, they have the gazelle that tells you that the tribes went there and they moved to that area. You see, these are the scattered tribes of Israel that James and Peter were writing to. How awesome is that? And I'm going to play a little clip for you of E. Raymond Capt and how he is explaining this about the names being changed to Gamera, and he found this out on the Assyrian tablets, and named Saka as in Isaac, and Gamera as in Gomer, the unfaithful wife.
Elamite and Old Persian languages, all three told the same story. The inscriptions show that the Babylonian name Gomera was written Saka on the Persian inscription, proving that the Gomera and the Saka were the same people. Now, the Greeks called these Scythians, I should say they called the Saka, Scythians in all their records. This is the first mention of the word Scythian. It's also interesting to note that the various names Gomera are called all have the same root, S-K, as Isaac. Now, before the tribes went into exile, they called themselves the House of Isaac. You can find this in the Bible in Amos 4, verses 7 and 16, I believe. Archaeology has not only identified these Scythians as members of the lost tribes of Israel, but for the first time provided us with realistic, lifelike pictures of what the ancient Hebrews people looked like. Now, unlike the stylized pictures we see the Egyptians made and formalized or stylized stone carvings made by the Babylonians and Persians, excavated from Scythian tombs north of Caucasus are found skillfully made gold work showing the everyday life of the Scythians. Here, two Scythian horsemen are astride their horses. Two Scythians here are fighting back to back using bows and arrows. Now, this reminds us of the little tribe of Benjamin that had, according to the Bible, 280,000 men of valor that bore shields and drew the bow. Now, to continue tracing the Israelites, under pressure from the Medes and the Persians, the Scythians, now this is the eastern branch of the Israelites, they migrated north of the Black Sea, coming into collision with the Cimmerians. Now, the Cimmerians, I consider them the western branch of the Israelites. These people had settled in the Carpathian regions. Now, the kinship lost during the passing centuries, ensuing battles, ended with the Cimmerians being pushed out of that area, and they moved westward. The Cimmerians then broke into two major groups, the larger part migrating up the Danube River Valley, arriving at its source in South Germany between 600 and 100 B.C., Now, Roman historians, they call these people Celts. This is the first mention now of the word Celt. A small group moved into the sparsely inhabited regions of the Baltic, but the Romans called them by the abbreviated name of Cimbri. Now, between the 4th and 1st centuries B.C., the Sarmatians, now these are a mixed non-Israelitish people, we believe partly Iranian, were pushing westward. They finally moved into the area of the then prosperous Scythian nation. Continued warfare then drove the Scythians out of their land, as they had done the Cimmerians, and the majority northward toward the Baltic areas. Now, by the end of the 2nd century B.C., we find only two small pockets of Scythians left on the shores of the Black Sea. Now, the Scythians, in turn, pushed the Cimbri westward to Jutland and the coast of Holland. Now, during this period of time...
Okay, so you can tell... This man has done his homework. He can trace them down to exactly who lived where and when. And so really, really great. I really encourage you to watch this video, What Happened to the 12 Tribes, E. Raymond Capt. It's on Anglo-Saxons, Hebrew, Israelites. Super, super important. So he's tracing them down, and he, you know, you can tell he's got a lot of Bible knowledge too. And so, anyway, you can watch more about that. I really appreciate this man, as well as his book, Missing Links, Discovered in Assyrian Tablets. And it's really a very exciting read, because it really connects to us the dots of, you know, who are the true Israelites, and proving where they came from and how you can know that who they are. And it's not, you know, there are a lot of people, not a lot, but there are some people talking about this online, that there are other tribes, but they're saying, oh, they're all black. They're not all even any one color. It's not about that. And I think that's just the wisdom of God, that he had it where we were, even from the very inception, there were five different mothers, and therefore different skin colors, and you know, really amazing that the Lord did it that way. So he knew how the enemy would try to cause this whole issue with the bloodline and division. All right, so now you see how they have been separated out. But I want to focus now real super quick on what happened with going into the British Isles. Super important. So if you remember, I was showing you in the southern tribe of Judah that there had bad kings down there too. If you look at 1 Kings and 2 Kings, it's basically a story of, you know, the bad kings in Israel and the bad kings in Judah, or sometimes you'd have a good king in Israel and sometimes a good king in Judah. Most of the time it's bad. All right, so the last king of Judah was this man named, a king named Hezekiah. And so this picture right here is where when he did not want to leave. But he knew that he was surrounded by Nebuchadnezzar's army, and so they were trying to get, you know, them, you know, out of there, and basically to come and take the gold and get them, you know, because they had to pay tribute and they weren't paying tribute, and so they tried to escape in the middle of the night. Well, hello, you're surrounded. Well, they were caught, and this is a picture of his two sons being killed before his very eyes, and then his eyes were gouged out. So the last thing he ever saw was his sons being killed before his eyes. But he was able to live on and the rest of his life and just be he ate at the king's table, not probably at his table per se, but he was provided for, is basically what it's saying. And so, yeah, he was the last king of Judah. But remember, he was from that Pharaoh's line of Judah. So what about the Zara line? Is there anything going to happen with that? Is there anything going to happen is the Pharaoh's line snuffed out? The reason this is important is because we need the Savior. We need the Savior to come. The Savior has not yet into the world. So we need this to continue. All right. So this is where it is in the Bible in Jeremiah 43 that Hezekiah had not only two sons, now they're dead, but he had two daughters. One was Tiatefi and one was Skoda. And so here's the story, the verse in Jeremiah 43, and I'll tell you what happened. After Nebuchadnezzar's army left and hauled all the people, or at least 95% of them, back to Babylon, then what happens? Well, Jeremiah had hidden Skoda and Tiatefi in the catacombs. Underneath all this mountains, they had all these catacombs, and you could hide out in there, and they would never find you. And so then they never did. And the Lord hid them so that they were not be able to be found. Also back in there is the Ark of the Covenant. And I'm not going to get on into that, but that's another video that you might want to watch on my Melissa Red Pill. It talks about what happened with the Ark of the Covenant. Absolutely amazing. I've heard that they moved it to Ireland. No, they did not. You cannot move a giant golden box. You just can't do it. It's not going to happen. And the Lord did not have that as the plan. And watch the video and you'll see what God's plan really was, which is extremely cool. Anyway, so of course, as all his plans are. Anyway, in Jeremiah 43:3, it says, "But Baruch the son of Neriah setteth thee on against us for to deliver us into the hand of the Chaldeans, that they might put us to death and carry us away captives into Babylon. So Johanan the son of Kareah and all the captains of the forces and all the people obeyed not the voice of the Lord to dwell in the land of Judah." They were afraid about following what Jeremiah said to do, and they said, "We need to escape to Egypt." Well, the Lord had said not to do that, but they don't want to do what the Lord has said to do, and so through Jeremiah, and so they, you know, and really Jeremiah has no power to do anything except what they're forcing him to do, as well as Tiatefi and Skoda. So, but Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces took all the remnant of Judah, the leftover people, and that were returned from all the nations whither they had been driven to dwell in the land of Judah, even men and women and children, and the king's daughters, Tiatefi and Skoda. The king's daughters, that's Hezekiah, the one whose sons were just killed. And now you've got Tiatefi, they're still alive. And it says this in Jeremiah 43:3, that they were taken to Egypt. And every person that Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had left with Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, and Jeremiah, the prophet, and Baruch, which is his assistant, the son of Neriah. So they came to the land of Egypt, for they obeyed not the voice of the Lord. They came thus they came even to Taphanes. I think is how you say it. Anyway, so this is how they ended up in Egypt. But then farther down, they didn't stay in Egypt. Nebuchadnezzar came and did the same thing in Egypt. That's exactly why the Lord said not to go to Egypt, because he knew that Nebuchadnezzar was going to go and lay siege on Egypt. So they ended up going to Ireland. And so guess who's already in Ireland? They already have the tribe of the second tribe of Judah, Zara, in Ireland. And so they ended up going to Ireland and joining with that tribe. Hariman was the king, and so Tia Tefi became the queen. And so they had the Stone of Destiny. They did take the Stone of Destiny. They didn't take the Ark of the Covenant, but they took that stone that I've been showing you all this time, this stone right here. They've continued carrying this stone, and they carried that to Ireland. And so now let me see if I can get you to the right page here. Okay, so here's a plaque where it says the prophet Jeremiah and the king Zedekiah's daughters in Ireland. There's the coat of arms, and it's showing the joining of these tribes, of the two tribes of Judah joining together, King David's harp and Zara's hand. Okay, the little red hand that came out but was not born. Okay, so then... yeah, this is the picture that I was showing you before. This is a picture of Tia Tefi being the first royal in Ireland. And so you see right there, she's got this what we think of as the British flag, but it's really the flag of Moses, really. And so, and also the trident, which is the 3-in-1 really of rule. And so she is now the queen of the British House. That's the first royalty there in England. And so she is crowned on this place right here. Let me see if I can make this open right here for you so you can see it a little bit better. Let's see. Is this it? Yeah. There is the Hill of Tara. When we went on this trip, it was not easy to do, but we ended up going to the Hill of Tara. And so right there is this figure eight. And for those of you who are following 17, you'll notice that 17 has the emblem of, yes, the green frog, but also the green figure eight. So that is really super cool that this is very, very biblical. And this Hill of Tara is where the kings and queens would be crowned. Now, when you're there, you can't really tell the topography when you're looking in this picture very well. But it's up on the top of this everything's rolling hills, but it's up, you know, kind of at the pinnacle, and so everyone could be around there and still be able to see when they were crowned. So they took that stone of destiny, or the coronation stone, and they put it right there on that figure eight. And so I think that it's hard to tell even from these pictures also, but when you're sitting in these circles, then the sound carries in these circles. So it's really, really cool. It's like a little mini amphitheater. But anyway, other people could be out in farther on the outskirts. So yeah, so this is the little town where you could get a drink over here, and then you walked around. There was a church right here, and then you could walk around and up here. And then right this mound right here, they say is Jeremiah's tomb. I'm not, you know, not really convinced that that's his tomb, but anyway, this is what it looks like on a map if you're looking at the British Isles. And then you see here, this is Ireland right here, and this is Dublin. And then when you get off of the boat, if you're going to go, you can get an Uber, but make sure your Uber guy doesn't leave you like he did us. He left us, and I'm like, okay, we've got to get back to this ship, but we did. He came back, thank goodness. And so yeah, here's the Hill of Tara right here. When you scroll in, you'll see it's a, you know, 37 minute drive, which is not that far, but it's a long walk if you don't have a car. And so here's the Hill of Tara right there, where you could actually go and see it. And so I am just so, so glad that we did get to go and see that. All right, so here, again, this is the beautiful, and you see this all around Ireland. You see these stones, and that, again, in my opinion, I don't know that E. Raymond Capps put this in the book, but I really think that it shows, again, that this is definitely the tribes of Israel. When you have all these 12 stones in this circle, again, going back to the zodiac, how they each coincide with one of the tribes of the zodiac. All right, So I'm going to show you this one other quick thing is that on the left side, you'll see that this is the line of Judah, Zara and Phares, and all these kings of Europe and the kings of England were coronated. And I believe that Tia Tepe was wonderful, and her sister Skoda became the queen in Scotland. So you'd have the two, Scotland and you have the England, but and they were both did a great job. Unfortunately, kings that were later on were not good and they usurped the throne, and that's another story. So if you notice here that this is coming from the line of Judah. Interesting though, here is that if the blessing is supposed to go through Joseph, then you would say, okay, well then Joseph had two sons and one was Manasseh, one is Ephraim, and many people think that a company of nations might be England. I don't know about that. But I do feel strongly that America is Manasseh, again, because our great seal has the symbols of Manasseh. At least our forefathers thought this. They thought that we represent Manasseh. That's why we're the amber waves of grain. That's why we have the symbols of the arrow and the olive branch. We're trying to have peace, but through strength, right? So, all right, I think that is really, really cool, starting from the line, really, the true line going from Abraham, Isaac, to Jacob, to Joseph. All right, I think that's super cool. Here is a picture of the throne that has the stone in it, the stone of destiny. You see how big it is right there. And so this was actually stolen by some Scottish students at one point. That's the legend has it that they stole it. And so that they ended up taking the real stone. Who knows where the real stone is? To be honest, I bet President Trump knows. I bet the Kennedys know. But so that's with a picture of it, though, so that they would say we are being crowned sitting on this stone that shows that we deserve to be in positions of authority. But if you remember, the Queen Elizabeth knew that the stone had been stolen and the one that had been replaced. They said, oh, we're sorry, we stole your stone. We'll give it back. The stone that they gave back was not the real stone, and she knew that. She didn't want anyone else to know it because it was obvious it was misshapen and not the same stone. And so that's where she wore this huge flowing dress, if you remember, to be crowned. All right, so this is the celebration where they're actually taking the crown, the stone. That's the one they're taking back. It's not even, you can see it's chopped and all that. It's not even the real stone. Back to Scotland. I know I'm going kind of fast, but they're all talking about it, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that's there's our Prince Andrew, which we all love to hate. Okay, so there they are. So you see the stone is very misshapen and odd shaped. A lot of people don't believe that that's the real one. I think that probably from the way back from the beginning, it was hidden way back at Stone Castle. All right, so now it says here that in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 31, it says, listen to the message from the Lord. You nations of the world, proclaim it in distant coastlands. Okay, I'm proclaiming it here. In distant coastlands, that's here in Texas, in America, in all of the world, we're all proclaiming this message. The Lord who scattered his people will gather them and watch over them as a shepherd does his flock. All right? So remember that we've all this has been going on. All this is the exile. The exile is we're wrapping up the exile, and we're going to be set free, all of the world. And he, all this time, he has gathered us, and he's watched over us as a shepherd does his flock. And he's done this for good, not for evil, to all of us. And now we're going to be set free. We're going to become his bride. And I think I've got this passage right here. Let me see this one. Yeah. Okay. No, not that one. Anyway, the passage all throughout the Minor Prophets, it talks about that we'll become his bride and we'll become, the Lord will have a covenant with us and that we won't be exiles anymore. Instead of being exiles, we'll become his bride. Now, I'm going to read to you in Romans chapter 9 about, who are these ones who say that they are Jews? Well, this is what it says in Romans. Let me actually read this other one real quick first. In Revelation chapter 2, verse 9, the Lord said that there are some who will say they're Jews and they are not. He says, these things say the first and the last who are dead and came to life. I know your works, your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich. But and I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not. They're of the synagogue of Satan. So this is how we know that there are some who say they are Jews and they're not. Now I'm going to get to the verse where it talks about that they're, you know, just because someone is even in the a physical progeny of an Israelite, maybe they're truly, it doesn't matter. That's the flesh profits nothing. The only thing that matters is faith shown by your works, right? That's exactly what James said, right? And that's how you know if you're truly a child of God, by your faith, just like Abraham, okay? So here it says that there are some who say they're Jews and they're not. They have taken the name of the Lord in vain. They know that they are not acting like God's people. They know they're doing evil, but they claim to be his, and then just by taking the name. Okay, that's what it means. Taking the name of the Lord your God in vain is not about using his word as a curse word. I'm not saying that you should use his name as a curse word. I'm just saying that that's not what it means. What it means to take the name of the Lord in vain is to take the name of him for evil purposes. Like the Khazarians who have taken the name, and you guys have seen this, I'm sure. This is a, let's see if I have a picture of this. Not there. The Khazarians have taken, here we go, here's the Khazarians, have taken the name for evil purposes. It even says this on the Brave browser. The Khazars are a semi-nomadic Turkish people who established a major commercial empire known as Khazaria in the late 6th century, spanning modern southern Russia, southern Ukraine, and western Kazakhstan. They emerged from the breakup of the Western Turkic Khaganate. Okay, so it really is very similar to what is being fought over right now. That's really, let me see if I can pick up that picture. No, that's not going to do it. Okay, let me see if I can open this tab for you. So it's very basically what they're fighting over is to root out these ones who have, who have used this land as their headquarters for evil. I mean, everybody has said the most corrupt place in the world has been Ukraine. And that's exactly what, for those of you who know history and what I've been talking about on this video, is that that's, we're rooting out this history, this evil that's been in there for all these years. And yes, they went in and they took this other land of in Palestine, but they never left this, their homeland of, you know, certain groups stayed right there in this area up here. Okay. So in southern Ukraine, southern Russia. All right. So I'm going to read to you the rest of this. It says that they, I'm going to fast forward a little bit. It says the Khazars are particularly noted for the conversion of the ruling elite to rabbinic Judaism in the 8th or 9th century, although the extent of this conversion among the general population remains uncertain. So they just converted for political purposes to use this for evil and to try to get away with their crime, saying, oh, if you say anything against us, it's because you're anti-Semitic. It's the same thing that they've been doing, running this game on humanity for such a long time. All right, so this is the one I wanted to show you in Romans chapter 9. It says that it's not that the word of God has taken no effect, but they're not all Israel who are of Israel. Just because they say they're Israel, or even if they have the bloodline of Israel, that doesn't make them true Israel. Nor are they all children, because they are the seed of Abraham, just like Esau. Esau was a grandson of Abraham. He was a demon. He was evil. But in Isaac, and it's funny because the church always wants to say he's so great. I digress. In Isaac, your seed shall be called. In Isaac shall your seed be called. That is, those who are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God. But the children of the promise are counted as the seed. Now, someone can get grafted in. They can get grafted in by faith, but they're, you know, it's a tough thing. If someone has been raised to do evil, it is very hard for them to turn away from that. Okay, so that's really what it's, you know, the children of the promise, for like with Isaac's Isaac's son was the child of promise, the miracle child, and he was born from above, and much like we are born again by the Spirit of God, he is born from above. All those who have been born again by the Spirit of God to reject Satan worship, reject evil, this is who we're talking about here, is the children of the promise. That's That's basically us. We are like Isaac, the children of the promise. The children of the promise are counted as the seed. We are. That's who we are. This is the word of promise. At this time, I will come, and Sarah shall have a son. You know, I will come and make you born again. In other words, all right. So anyway, it goes into more about that in that chapter. But that's the main thing I wanted you to see is that just because someone says they're a Jew or an Israelite does not mean that they are. That's what it says here in the word. And it's and Abraham was also told that those who are children of Abraham have the same faith as Abraham. All right. So I hope that was helpful. I've been talking for, I don't know, a long time. It feels like a long time. I hope that's really helpful. I hope you really like that. And I hope it's going to really help you. Maybe you can share this video with people, help them to understand biblically who the true Israelites are. And the thing is, you might be a true Israelite. The thing is, most of us have intermarried and married and all this. It would be impossible to go back. Unless you have a pedigree like my little wiener dogs and little dachshunds, it's impossible to find out. And it doesn't matter. The thing that matters is faith working through love, where your faith works through your actions and your works. Okay, that is how you know if you are a child of God. So you can check out more of my videos right here. Check out our health page right here. Check out our social media and also the other books we've written on end times, because it's the good news. It's the end times for them. Finally, it's the end of the exile. I hope that's helpful. Okay, let's pray. Thank you again, Lord. We praise you and thank you that this is what you have written. We were exiled, but we are being restored, and we're going to be married to you and have this beautiful golden age that you have promised. And Lord, I just thank you that we are Israelites, either by progeny or by faith. Either way, we are your children. And we prove it by the way that we live and that we reject evil. And I just thank you for how you have this all spelled out for us in your word. I just pray for everyone who's been listening that you'll just soak these truths into their hearts so they'll really understand. Maybe if they listen two or three times until they really piece all these things together, because we've been under so much brainwashing. And I just pray that more people will understand the truth of who Israel truly is. And that this is we're your people all throughout the world, red and yellow, black and white. We're precious in your sight. Everybody all over the world who loves you, the righteous throughout the world, are Israel, not those who have taken the name in vain. Lord, I thank you that you are making this clear to all of us. I pray that very soon everyone will know and that the evildoers will be cast out so we can enter the golden age. I pray all this in your wonderful name, King Jesus. Amen. All right, guys, I love you. I hope you really had a good time. I'm going to show you one other quick thing. This is, again, if you want to find out more about what I'm talking about on the golden age, the promises of the golden age is going to be absolutely wonderful. Also, End Times and 1,000 Years of Peace about this is the end times. This is the Revelation decode. It's the end times for them and 1,000 Years of Peace for us. The end times, major clues from minor prophets. This is what all the minor prophets told us about this day, that this great and mighty army would appear and would nothing like it would ever be seen before or ever seen again, because we're going to cast out these evildoers once and for all. And then end times, this is biblical. This is Bible stories, 17 of them, about how we're actually seeing all of this played out before our eyes. It's an amazing day. And he gave us this roadmap in his word. We just didn't understand it, but now we do. I'm so glad we know all these Bible stories that he has given to us, so we see kind of how things are going to roll out. All right, guys, I love you. I'm going to jet, and I will talk to you. Actually, I'm going to do this one quick thing. I'm going to do this, and I will talk to you later.
Sound the trump in Zion. Raise the alarm on my holy mountain. Let everyone tremble in fear, because the day of the Lord is upon us. It is a day of darkness and gloom, a day of thick clouds and deep blackness. But suddenly, like dawn spreading across the mountains, a great and mighty army appears. Nothing like it has been seen before or will ever be seen again. The Lord is at the head of the column. He leads them with a shout. This is his mighty army, and they follow his orders.